He said breathlessly, good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the program. Glad you could make it. The announcement was made today from the Rose Garden, flanked by a couple of military people, a couple of civilian people. Barack Obama made it very clear that the commander is changing, but the policy remains the same where it concerns Afghanistan. That's a shame. We're going to play, in case you missed a lot of it today, we're going to play three sound segments here for you. So you can hear pretty much the gist of what Obama said. This was the first thing that he said.
Today I accepted General Stanley McChrystal's resignation as commander of the International Security Assistance Force in Afghanistan. I did so with considerable regret, but also with certainty that it is the right thing for our mission in Afghanistan, for our military, and for our country. I'm also pleased to nominate General David Petraeus to take command in Afghanistan, which will allow us to maintain the momentum and leadership that we need to succeed. I don't make this decision based on any difference in policy with General McChrystal, as we are in full agreement about our strategy. Nor do I make this decision out of any sense of personal insult. Stan McChrystal has always shown great courtesy and carried out my orders faithfully. But war is bigger than any one man or woman, whether a private, a general, or a president. And as difficult as it is to lose General McChrystal, I believe that it is the right decision for our national security.
Okay. I wonder what momentum he's talking about, that the quick transition from General McPistol to General Petraeus. What's the momentum? Are we the momentum that this month is producing the highest number of U.S. casualties in any given month since this invasion and occupation began? What momentum is he talking about? And he says it will allow us to also to maintain the leadership that we need to succeed. What is success? I mean, seriously, what are the criteria for success? Is it the elimination of Al-Qaeda? Well, Al-Qaeda is pretty much gone from Afghanistan. They're in Pakistan. Bush chased them into Iraq. They're in the Horn of Africa. They're in Midtown Manhattan. Probably Denver, Miami, and Mexico City. So, what, the Taliban? The dismantling or elimination of the Taliban? How is he going to do that? That is a religious / tribal / cultural / social construct. They're crazy. They're crazier than outhouse rats. Nobody disagrees with that. They're like Christian fundamentalists in this country, or Jewish fundamentalists in Israel. I mean, they're just bat droppings nuts. The Taliban. So he says the decision was not based on any difference in policy with General McPistol, and we're in full agreement about our strategy, which is... And he also says, I don't make this decision out of any sense of personal insult. Well, then why are you doing it? I mean, how do you separate? I'd like to know how Obama separates the president from the person, which is what he does here. I mean, he is the president. It wasn't William Henry Harrison that was being disrespected by this cadre of clowns under the command and control of David, McChrystal, Stanley McChrystal. It was Obama. But Obama never takes any personal insult, does he? That's a shame, but that's Obama. And he says, McChrystal has always shown great courtesy and carried out my orders faithfully. Okay, in public, he's shown great courtesy? I bet he has. But behind your back... Oh, never mind. If you missed it, Mr. President, far be it for me to try to explain it to you. You're smarter than I am. You're better educated than I am. And you're the president. Here's the second one.
The conduct represented in the recently published article does not meet the standard that should be set by a commanding general. It undermines the civilian control of the military that is at the core of our democratic system. And it erodes the trust that's necessary for our team to work together to achieve our objectives in Afghanistan. I've got no greater honor than serving as Commander-in-Chief of our men and women in uniform. And it is my duty to ensure that no diversion complicates the vital mission that they are carrying out. That includes adherence to a strict code of conduct. It is also true that our democracy depends upon institutions that are stronger than individuals. That includes strict adherence to the military chain of command and respect for civilian control over that chain of command. And that's why, as Commander-in-Chief, I believe this decision is necessary to hold ourselves accountable to standards that are at the core of our democracy.
Woo! Well, I guess that would all be applicable and true and cast in concrete or pumice stone, something, cast in something, if we were in fact engaged in a legal, that is, a reactive war, which we're not. As far as he said, core of our democratic system and core of our democracy, there twice within 60 seconds, the core of our democratic system does not allow for violation, it shouldn't anyway, violation of international law as United States, a dying empire, desperate for natural resources to sustain an unsustainable lifestyle, ricochets around the planet, with its corporate partners destroying, gouging, blasting, eating, knocking down anything that gets in its way. What the democratic system? Who is Barack Obama talking to? He's not talking to me. Is he talking to you? I mean, he may be smarter than I am, but Jesus, I had 10th grade American history and government. I did. And it's very clear in that class, even though the teacher had really bad breath, but it was clear in that class that war is not conducted because the Congress sits back and allows something called the War Powers Act to go into effect and then never pays any further attention. War, the invasion of other countries, the murder of people, and the killing of our own people, requires not just a declaration, but historically has involved an increase in taxes, a war tax to pay for the war, a universal conscription so that the entire country feels the lash and the pain and the suffering of losing family members and having sons and fathers and daughters come home blind, legless, or with their minds shattered. So what democracy, whose core you're addressing, are you talking about, Mr. President?
They got me down.
And finally, at the end of President Obama's farewell address to Stanley McChrystal today, he let the world know how difficult it was to part company with such a sterling leader.
Let me conclude by saying that it was a difficult decision to come to the conclusion that I've made today. Indeed, it saddens me to lose the service of a soldier who I've come to respect and admire. But the reasons that led me to this decision are the same principles that have supported the strength of our military and our nation since the founding. So once again, I thank General McChrystal for his enormous contributions to the security of this nation and to the success of our mission in Afghanistan. I look forward to working with General Petraeus and my entire national security team to succeed in our mission. And I reaffirm that America stands as one in our support for the men and women who defend it.
But the men and women that are sent into Afghanistan and Iraq, Mr. President, are not defending the United States. They really aren't. The cops that grabbed the bomber, the would-be bomber in Midtown Manhattan, they're defending the United States. But, Mr. President, you're lying. You're lying. And how do you respect and admire someone who deliberately lied about the murder of Pat Tillman? I mean, it's one thing to, you know, to say in a time of war, you have to have liars, deceivers, and killers loose. Who else is going to do the dirty work? I mean, who's going to go kill Baptist ministers? No, they may talk a good story, but no, they would. I mean, who's going to do the wet work, as the expression goes? Who's going to do that? People with honor don't co-conspire to invade countries that have done nothing to us and whose territory may have provided a haven for a bunch of religious crazy people, just like the United States provides a haven for a bunch of religious crazy people. But And maybe a couple of them got some training there. We train people to use drone missiles to wipe out civilians in, or drone aircraft to wipe out civilians. We train them in, where? Nevada? North Carolina? Mr. President, how do you respect and admire? Do you respect him and admire him because he's a liar? Because he's arrogant? Because he'll do the dirty work that your corporate... Oh, I hate right to say masters. It's got such a nasty-ass racist overtone to it. That's your corporate accomplices. Much better. Instruct you to fulfill. Is that why you admire him? Because he was willing to commit up close and personal murder, working for Dick Cheney. He was agreed to run an assassination squad for one of the most blatant war criminals in the history of the human race, and that would be Dick Cheney. You respect and admire the man? Wow. Okay. Of course you do. I don't know why I sit here all incredulous about all this, huh? I mean, most of us knew from the beginning. Back during the campaign, we talked about it. You vote for Barack Obama, you're voting for a corporatist. You know that if you're a regular listener to this program. Sure, there was the thrill of history being made. Oh, my goodness. A man with an African father and an American mother. Let's see. African American. Whoa! A real African American who is going to be president of the United States. Okay. The announcement today, especially the emphasis by the president that the policy will remain the same. It's just there will be someone new conducting that policy. And not really new. Petraeus is a military man, and Petraeus knows what his job is. His job is to do the same thing. He's got the same job as Barack Obama. Exactly the same job. It's just that one of them... Well, actually, they both wear uniforms, don't they? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
Progressive Talk. It's Mike Malloy.
Just sing a song and bring the sunny weather. Happy trails to you till we meet again. Who cares about the clouds?
Oh,
when
shut
we're
up. 25 before the hour, Petraeus will land. I wonder if Petraeus will wind up going to work for DynCorp, Blackwater, or some weapons manufacturer. Regarding using the term master where it concerns Obama obeying his masters, Paul writes, like you, I also hate using the racist overtone. But in the capitalist world, there are two types of people, the wealthy slave owner and the slave. And in the cutthroat capitalist system, somebody always makes money at the expense and exploitation of somebody else. Because after all, that is the true essence of the so-called free market. And that's the way anarcho-capitalist libertarians want it to be. And from Sand, and you might want to, I've got a website and her email here that I want you to check out. I checked it out earlier today. Hi, Mike. Thanks for reading Ray McGovern's piece last night. In 2006, I went to D.C. to spend 2 weeks with Code Pink and subsequently got arrested for civil disobedience. 40 of us sat in John Conyers' office asking that impeachment be put back on the table. Ray McGovern was arrested, too, and he was nice and walked me, quote, virgin arrestee, end quote, through my anxious moments, such as when I wiggled out of my plastic cuffs in the paddy wagon, he said put them back on, or they would tighten them to the point of extreme pain. Anyway, I came home, I had signs all over my yard, drive out the Bush regime and arrest the war criminals. Now I cannot find any signage saying Obama is a war criminal. Granted, I could make my own, but I feel that putting them up would somehow make me appear a teabagger sympathizer. Let me digress a moment. Yeah, that's true. In criticizing the man's policies, Obama's policies, in criticizing his warmongering attitude, in criticizing his center-right government, in criticizing his timidity, in criticizing his going along to get along, one feels, you know, like, oh, like sand here, that, you know, I'm going to be a teabagger, a sympathizer. Not true, and there's a very simple reason. Teabaggers don't think. They don't think about these issues. They say dumbass stuff like keep the government's hands off my Medicare check. I mean, teabaggers are by definition some of the most ignorant savages ever to have a voting card in the United States. They're just screwballs, and they're easily led, and they do what they're told to do. Back to Sand's email. There will be a national peace conference in Albany, New York, July 23rd through the 25th, with many great speakers and workshops. Will you please give out the website on your show? The website is nationalpeaceconference.org. Will you post that on our website? Nationalpeaceconference.org. That's all. We have high hopes that we will be able to figure out how to jumpstart the peace movement. Sand. Nationalpeaceconference.org. You should check it out. And take a look at the list of speakers who are going to be there. We'll put a link to this at our website, nationalpeaceconference.org. Kathy, the Maine Coyote. Hi, Mike. So General McPistol is replaced with General Petraeus, and there's absolutely no policy change. Has anybody noticed that things aren't going so well in Afghanistan lately? More Americans, among others, killed this month than in any other. We're supposed to be depending on an absolutely worthless so-called government under oil guy Karzai as it is dissolving before our eyes, and the insurgency continues to grow in a different city every day. While McPistol sure did a bang-up job, President Obama's praise of McPistol made me gag. I wonder how Pat Tillman's family feels about him. Now, what can we expect from the guy that was the architect of the Iraq surge of troops? How much more blood has to be spilled? To top it all off, I heard today that even if we start drawing down troops in July 2011, it will probably take 10 years to get out of there. Another 10 years, on top of the nearly 9 years we've been there already. I can't believe President Obama doesn't know the history of the many nations that have crawled out of Afghanistan with nothing but blood and treasure spent and absolutely nothing to show for it. I guess it's all up to Petraeus now, since he seems beloved by all. Is there anything good to come out of this, Mike? Of course not. I don't think so. Kathy, Maine Coyote. Well, regarding things not going so well in Afghanistan, yeah, without a doubt, Norman Solomon addresses that today at Truthout. When the wheels are coming off, it doesn't do much good to change the driver. How true. And as he points out, whatever the name of the commanding general in Afghanistan, the U.S. war effort is going to continue its carnage and futility. Uh, Norman Solomon says, between the lines, some news accounts are implying as much futility. Hours before General McChrystal's meeting with Obama today, the New York Times reported, quote, the firestorm was fueled by increasing doubts, even in the military, that Afghanistan can be won, and by crumbling support, public support, for the nine-year war as American casualties rise, end quote. And Solomon points out, for months, McChrystal star had been slipping. He says, a few days before the Rolling Stone piece caused a sudden plunge from war-making grace, Time Magazine's conventional wisdom weather vane, Joe Klein, was notably down on McChrystal's results. Klein said, quote, 6 months after Barack Obama announced his new Afghan strategy in a speech at West Point, the policy seems stymied, end quote. So, with words like stymied and stalemate being applied to the Afghan war, that hardly means the U.S. military is anywhere near withdrawal. Norman Solomon points out that Walter Cronkite used the word stalemate in his famous February 1968 declaration on CBS Evening News to the viewers that the Vietnam War couldn't be won. This was in 68. Cronkite said the following, quote, we have been too often disappointed by the optimism of the American leaders, both in Vietnam and Washington, to have faith any longer in the silver linings they find in the darkest clouds. It seems now more certain than ever that the bloody experience of Vietnam is to end in a stalemate. And yet the war in Vietnam, if you'll remember, continued on for another 5 years, almost six, inflicting more unspeakable horror on a vast scale. And as Norman Solomon says, the most profound aspects of the Rolling Stone article, The Runaway General, have little to do with the general. The takeaway is, or should be, that the war, the U.S. war in Afghanistan, is an insoluble disaster. While the military rationales that propel it are insatiable. The article said, quote, instead of beginning to withdraw troops next year, as Obama promised, the military hopes to ramp up its counterinsurgency campaign even further. And the author of that Rolling Stone piece pointed out, quote, counterinsurgency has succeeded only in creating a never-ending demand for the primary products supplied by the military, perpetual war. Solomon closes by saying fierce controversy is focused on terminating a runaway general, but the crying need is to terminate a runaway war. What is Obama? What is he? Oops. You know, sometimes I forget who's really running the country. What I was going to say, what is Obama afraid of? Well, why doesn't he show real leadership? Why doesn't he say, look, I inherited this mess. I've given it 2 years. I've had enough. This is, you know, we are not going to have another Vietnam. I am ordering General Petraeus to begin the drawdown now. And I would suggest to our enemies in Afghanistan, enemies that we have created, you know, those people used to be our allies, folks, when it was the Soviet Union occupying that country. I would implore our allies, I'm sorry, implore our enemies, our former allies, to sit down and shut up while we leave their country. Because I'm going to make an effort to withdraw everything. And if you start shooting at us as we're leaving, I'll probably have to drop a nuke on you. I mean, whatever it takes, right?
Called you so many times today, and I guess it's all true what your girlfriend said. You don't ever want to see me again, and your brother's gonna kill me, and he's 6'10". I guess you call it cowardice, but I'm not prepared to go on like this. I can't stand losing.
with the truth. It's More Mike Malloy.
Yes, it is. Got an email from Kay in San Francisco. Not a report card because school isn't in session. However, her website has finally got all the bells and whistles. So check it out. Kay's report card. KAYSreportCard.com. Check it out. But anyway, she writes, Mike, regarding this whole McChrystal Petraeus thing, I'm at a loss to understand why anyone gives a blank. It just doesn't matter. The war will go on, and Americans will continue to pour billions of dollars down a rat hole, all in the name of, quote, defeating Al-Qaeda, end quote. I'm so sick of the lies and propaganda, and I've reached the point at which I truly believe that until the American people rise up, nothing will ever change. Given the fact that most Americans simply shut up and take whatever their leaders dish out, I would say it's a lost cause. The only hope appears to be what you've said on the program several times over the past week. Give it to the Republicans. Let them have it all. I agree. If the continued spending of billions of dollars on a war based on lies is not enough, two of them actually, if the destruction of the Gulf of Mexico won't do it, well, we're going to have to experience pain on a level we cannot even fathom before we finally say, enough. Don't hold your breath. Okay. P.S. Sorry for the gloom and doom, but this is how I'm feeling today. Our foggy and chilly summer, quote-unquote, weather has arrived here in the city. I'm attaching a photo so you won't think I'm lying when I tell you I had to turn on the heater today. Yeah, you should see the picture, Kathy. It's, you know, talk about foggy San Francisco. We are dying from the heat here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains. And this will probably be the last one. I'm going to get off the Petraeus thing. Once again, Barack Obama, I think, had an excellent chance. Oh, see, there I go again, thinking that Barack sees himself as in charge. He's in charge of this kind of stuff. But the energy that's in charge is the capitalist corporatist attitude in this country that says the American people don't count. The environment doesn't count. Honor doesn't count. Justice doesn't count. I almost said it again. Hey, Barack Obama had a golden opportunity today. He could have said, look, we're pulling out. Never mind. This is, I'll share with you Bruce's email and then, Bruce's email. Now we're going to move on. He writes, some talking heads today were getting all wet over the number of combat stripes Petraeus wears on his right sleeve. What a man. The only thing is that nowhere in his career would he have been in real combat. He graduated after Vietnam was over and was on the fast track to command school and was always a staff officer. He was in command of a combat division during the Iraqi occupation, but generals don't lead the charge with a saber anymore. He was shot in the chest during a live fire exercise in 1991, but the injury wasn't that serious. He has a ton of medals, but I don't know if he got another one for that, being shot during the live fire exercise. He doesn't have any Purple Hearts, but he might get one for fainting in that Senate hearing. Bruce. Huh? Do what?
I forgot he passed out.
Just the other day.
That's
yeah.
Right. Right. Dehydration or whatever. Hey, I want to ask everybody out there to lay bets on how quickly McChrystal is working for Fox. How quickly before he's a paid political consultant? Saturday?
How long do you think it'll take for him to
Monday
show up on Limbaugh's program so Limbaugh
tomorrow,
you know, can sit there and tell him what a big hero is? I wonder if Stanley would say, Limbaugh, aren't you the one who had the pimple on your ass? Didn't you avoid military service that way? You're a little overweight there, too, aren't you? Boy, look at me. I'm just as thin as a whippet. You know I only sleep 3 hours a night, and I do that standing up. Huh?
While drinking.
And I eat once a day, wood chips and straw. That's it.
And vodka.
I'm a warrior. God damn it. right, kill stuff, break things. Not like that Neek, I mean the African-American we have in the White House. He's never been to war.
I saw a top 10 reasons, or top 10 excuses that McChrystal was going to give to Obama.
Yeah.
And one of them was going to be, no, Mr. President, I said bigger, you were bigger.
Yeah. Well, we won't have old Stanley to kick around anymore, will we? And as far as David Petraeus, what is interesting is that Obama, when he was a senator, of course, he was all against the Petraeus idea of a surge into Iraq. Because remember, see, Obama had that he had the luxury. He had two wars going. There were two wars going. So he could say, that's the good one. That's the bad one. I mean, this is crazy making stuff. It really is. It's just crazy making stuff. So Obama, and because both the wars were corporate wars, both were done at the insistence of, not the American people, but at the insistence of the capitalists who demand this sort of thing. So, but Barack Obama, for the first time, I guess, of any incoming or hope, presidential hopeful, he got to say, that war is bad, this war is good. So now, they've kind of bled together. He's got the guy in charge of the bad war, now running the good war, the one that Obama says, we will never, ever give up. August 2011, to start withdrawal. Oh, please. The hour. All right, moving on. I'm just chuckling. I'm sorry. I'm chuckling at an email here that wouldn't make any sense unless you knew the context, and the context is immaterial. Sorry. Just say it was another one of Cap Mary in Memphis, one of her droll emails. According to IsraelNationalNews.com, I've never heard of this. I don't even know if this is a real. They've got a website. I went to it. But according to them, the Israeli Air Force recently unloaded military equipment at a Saudi Arabia base. And a large American force has massed in Azerbaijan, which is on the northwest border of Iran. Both reports, followed by less than a week, the Pentagon's confirmation that an unusually large American fleet sailed through the Suez Canal Saturday. Several reports stated that an Israeli ship joined the armada. The Pentagon played down the news, saying the American maneuvers were routine. However, a report by Iran on Wednesday that it has enriched dozens of pounds of 17% enriched in uranium serves as a reminder that time is running out to stop Iran from being able to produce a nuclear weapon. Iran's Fars news agency said the Israeli military aircraft landed 10 days ago at the Saudi base near the city of Tabuk, located in northwest Saudi Arabia, one of the closest areas in the oil kingdom to Iran. Blah, 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 blah. Regarding Azerbaijan, Iran's government-funded Press TV reported that the Revolutionary Guards began closely patrolling the Islamic Republic's northwestern border after noticing the American forces, which Iran claimed also included Israeli troops. Azerbaijan's independent Trend news site also reported on Wednesday that American armed forces are in the country, which is in an armed conflict with rebels. So there you go. Just thought I'd pass it on. This comes from IsraelNationalNews.com. And the gusher. Did you see the video today? The gusher? The oil gusher? In the Gulf? Oh my God. What is this? The collector or something came off? Yeah. According to McClatchy, workers pulled that device. Because there had been an accident, is that right? Coast Guard Admiral Thad Allen, the Obama administration's point man on all this, told reporters in his daily briefing that the long-term impact of the decision to take off that top hat device collecting crude oil, the long-term impact of the decision was uncertain. Jesus God. But video from the leak showed crude gushing unhindered now into the water for the first time since this device was set in place June 3rd. BP called the measure temporary. Oh, shut up. What do you mean BP called the measure temporary? If they said they were befouling the Gulf at this point, I wouldn't believe them. The lying bastards. Have you seen that video? It's pretty scary now. Why is the Coast Guard? I don't quite get this. Why is the Coast Guard in charge of this? The Coast Guard is under the command, or it's a department within the Department of Homeland Security. Why isn't the Navy in charge of this? Why isn't the Navy, the United States Navy, that has all sorts of submersibles to go down there? They also have been working. Did we mention this the other night? They have been working diligently with underwater explosive devices. Oh, this was a column in the New York Times the other day. Not nuclear explosives, but other explosives that apparently are going to be needed here. I know. The parallel wells are going to work, right? So everything's going to be okay. Well, it's not going to be okay. But this op-ed piece in the New York Times the other day, yeah, Christopher Brownfield, he writes, "Blow up the well to save the Gulf." He says the Navy also commands explosive experts who have vast knowledge of underwater demolitions, and it has some of the world's finest underwater engineers at Naval Reactors, the secretive program that is responsible for designing nuclear reactors for nuclear submarines. With the help of scientists in our national weapons laboratories and experts in private companies, these engineers can be let loose on the well. To allay any concerns over militarizing the crisis, the Navy and Coast Guard should be placed in a task force structure alongside a core of experts, including independent oil engineers, drilling experts with dedicated equipment, geologists, energy analysts, and environmentalists who could provide pragmatic options for emergency action. Yeah, truly, the Obama administration's reaction to this has been an abject failure. It really has. Christopher Brownfield, who was a Navy, he's a former nuclear submarine officer, and he said, with this new structure in place, the Navy could focus on stopping the leak with a conventional demolition. This means more than simply blowing it up. It means drilling a hole parallel to the leaking well and lowering charges to form an explosive column. Upon detonating several tons of explosives, a pressure wave of hundreds of thousands of pounds per square inch would spread outward in the same way that light spreads from a tubular fluorescent bulb, evenly and far. Such a sidelong explosion would implode the oil well upstream of the leak by crushing it under a layer of impermeable rock, much as stepping on a garden hose stops the stream of water. It's true that the primary blast of a conventional explosion is less effective underwater than on land because of the intense back pressure that muffles the shock wave. But as a submariner who studied the detonation of torpedoes, I learned that an underwater explosion also creates rapid follow-on shock waves. In this case, the expansion and collapse of explosive gases inside the hole would act like a hydraulic jackhammer, further pulverizing the rock. At best, a conventional demolition would seal the leaking well completely and permanently without damaging the oil reservoir. At worst, oil might seep through a torturous flow path that would complicate long-term cleanup efforts. But given the size and makeup of the geological structure between the seabed and the reservoir, it's virtually inconceivable that an explosive could blast a bigger hole than already exists and release more oil. And why aren't we doing that? Why aren't we indeed?
Radio right from the left. It's More Mike Malloy.
I'm begging you to stay. So please don't go. Don't go.
21 past the hour. Roz sent me some news here. Australia has their first female prime minister. Her name is Julia Gillard. And also, Roz Rice, did you hear about the earthquake in Ontario? Yeah, I heard about that today. It was a 5-point-something in strength, but extremely shallow, just a couple of miles below the surface. Funny thing is, it occurred right where the G20 meeting will be taking place. So I guess all the money in the world can't really buy security now, can it? It was felt as far away as Michigan and New York State. The epicenter was in the Ottawa Valley, but shook Montreal and Toronto and northern Ontario. I hope the G20 take this as an omen. Yee. Terry writes, Mike, are the evangelicals missing yet? With hell spewing forth from below the gulf and our Mother Earth broken and bleeding, I was wondering if the evangelicals have started rapturing yet. According to their doctrine, they're supposed to be taken out of the way before all hell breaks loose. I'm hoping to soon hear that the likes of Pat Robertson and Sarah Palin have gone poof. At least with all the blank we're going to have to endure, it would be nice not to have to listen to them anymore. By the way, how about a couple of rousing choruses of Who Stole the Kishka? I think we all need a mental health break. Do you still have Who Stole the Kishka? Huh? Yeah, would you find it? And we'll all get up and do a dance to some klezmer music. You want to do that? Okay, let's do that. Kathy will find it. And, the federal judge who overturned Obama's 6-month moratorium, it's reported now that he owned a lot of stock in numerous companies involved in the offshore oil industry, including Transocean, which leased the Deepwater Horizon drilling rig to BP. That's according to his 2008 financial disclosure reports. U.S. District Judge Martin Feldman issued a preliminary injunction yesterday barring the enforcement of the president's proposed 6-month moratorium. According to Feldman's financial disclosure form posted online by Judicial Watch, of all people, the judge owns stock in Transocean, as well as 5 other companies that are either directly or indirectly involved in offshore drilling business. It's not surprising that Feldman, who's a judge for the Eastern District of Louisiana, has invested in the offshore drilling business. An Associated Press investigation found earlier this month that more than half the federal judges in the districts affected by the BP spill have financial ties to the oil and gas industry. Judge Feldman did not immediately return a message seeking comment. No kidding. Oh, my God. And you don't think corporate America owns the judiciary, too? Huh? Did you find it? You do have it? Okay. Let's get up and dance. Now, you have to get up and dance. Okay? You do, too. Okay, you ready? Oh, God. All right. Come on. Up you go. Let's go!
Someone stole the key card. Someone stole the key card. Someone stole the key card. From the butcher shop. Who stole the key card? Who stole the key card? Who stole the key card? From the butcher shop. Round and firm and fully packed. It was hanging from the rack. Someone stole the key card. While I lay on my back. Who stole the key card? Who stole the key card? Who stole the key card? From the butcher shop.
Damn it! Hey, 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 hey! It's klezmer music. Keep it going there, Kathy. Jesus, where's my heart medicine? I'm coming home, Mom! Hey, 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 hey! I want to see Prairie, too, get up and dance. Here we go, here we go. Hoppa! No, not hoppa. Don't we have to break here? Okay, there's your... There's your Who Stole the Pizza, the Kishka. Hi, hi. We'll be back after the break.
treat your body. You can have my...
Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang. Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang.
Ready for a liberal helping of truth? It's More Mike Malloy.
When you walk that walk and you talk that talk, you knocks me out off of my feet. Boom, 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 boom.
Bang, it is bang, 25 bang. Before the hour. Doctors now are calling for help in protecting these Gulf oil spill workers. Two of them died today. The report that I have, maybe everybody has this, I don't know, is one of them committed suicide, I guess, and the other one involved a pool accident. I'm not sure what that means. I don't know if they're related to all this or not, but a group of doctors who have tracked the 9/11 rescue workers' illnesses are urging the Obama administration to, in their words, prevent a repetition of costly mistakes, end quote, made after the terrorist attacks by protecting these oil spill workers from toxic exposure. You know, once again, I guess you see the limits of power in the executive branch. I thought Cheney and Bush took care of all this, that all Obama has to do is sign an executive order, you know, put respirators on these people. I don't know. Anyway, this is from McClatchy also. In a letter McClatchy obtained that was sent to health and safety officials earlier this month, for God's sake, this is the 23rd today. 14 doctors said oil spill workers should get the maximum level of protection because of what they're being exposed to. The doctors wrote, failure to recognize the errors made from the response to the World Trade Center disaster and a further failure to benefit from their attendant lessons may well lead to needless risk to human health in the Gulf. And it goes on. Meanwhile, well, anyway, experts agree that the level of exposure is lower than federal safety standards permit, but they say that what little information has been released offers more questions than answers. Well, yeah, BP isn't recording a majority of the exposures to air pollutants as part of its official tracking. Yeah, why should they? You know, BP, it doesn't make any difference how sincere their institutional ads that are running now appear to be. You know, they're not going to put anything out there that says, yeah, we got to protect these people. Are you kidding? Oh, and by the way, remember Joe Barton, the Republican from Texas, the moron that apologized to Tony Hayward, the CEO of BP? Well, his Republican caucus has agreed that he will retain his top spot on the House Energy and Commerce Committee. And when the Republicans win the House, which I hope they do in 2010, this rat bastard will be the chairman of that committee. You know, sometimes you have to burn the house down before you can build one on the smoldering lot. According to Republican leaders, Mr. Barton gave a, quote, heartfelt apology, end quote, to members of the Republican conference this morning. That's according to one of his toughest critics, Representative Joe Bonner, Republican of Alabama. Bonner told TheHill.com that Barton's apology was, well, that's the end of that. And John Boehner, the House Minority Leader, said that the Barton matter is closed, no more, that's it. You know, they and it wasn't just Joe Barton. What about the 100 members of the Republican, what was it, steering committee or whatever it is? They issued a statement prior to Barton saying the same thing. It was a shakedown. When are they going to be able to keep their seats. Oh, my God. We're going to open up the phones for you. The number here is 877-996-2556. So if you'd like to call in, we... we'll take your call. There's one other thing I want to share with you. This is from Cortland Malloy, no relation. He spells his name differently from the way I spell mine, but he writes for the Washington Post. He says, imagine that the inauguration of George W. Bush had sparked an explosive rise in African-American militia groups. Suppose thousands of heavily armed black men began gathering at training camps in wooded areas throughout the country, devising military tactics for taking back their country after what they believed was an electoral coup. Do you think Bush and Cheney would have reacted to a black militaristic buildup as coolly as President Obama has to the phenomenal growth of the white militias? Is that a trick question, Cortland? Since Obama took office last year, the number of white militias has shot up from about 170 to more than 500, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center. Armed with enough firepower to take on a police department, some of these groups are honing their sniper skills, using photographs of Obama for target practice. And they're all teabaggers, and they're all Republicans. Every single last one of these pigs. They cling to the delusion that the nation's first black president is somehow a subversive working for Muslim extremists. Mark Potok, director of the Southern Poverty Law Center's Intelligence Project, told Cortland, quote, if the people we saw running around armed to the teeth were black, I think their organizations would be destroyed in a matter of hours. If people saw on their TV screens photos of black militia members shooting at images of a white president, I don't think they would last. Well, duh! This racial disparity comes to mind, Cortland writes, whenever I see militia leaders carping about government tyranny while enjoying the special privileges that come with being white. One such group, the Southeast Michigan Volunteer Militia, was featured in that documentary on MSNBC, Chris Matthews' documentary, The Rise of the New Right. A spokesman for the militia group said, quote, five areas that we focus on are crime, disaster, invasion, tyranny, and terrorism. All five of those cover threats that would interrupt our ways of life. This thug is worried about terrorism. With his militia lurking behind trees, dressed in camo and wielding who knows what military armament picked up at some gun show. And he's worried about terrorism? Jesus, God. Cortland writes, what's even more astounding is that Lackamore's group has links to the Hutterie Militia, another Michigan-based group whose members were arrested by the FBI in March and charged with plotting to kill a police officer and then slaughter scores more by setting off a bomb at the funeral. The Hutterie's intent was to trigger an uprising against the federal government. And yet the Southeastern Michigan Militia continues to operate with impunity, as if it were some latter-day Army of the Potomac. Yeah, we've talked about this before. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine a bunch of heavily armed black people running around talking about they're going to take our country back from George W. Bush and Dick Cyborg Cheney? Cortland writes, let's say then Vice President Cheney found out that a black militia group had ties to a terrorist organization seeking to levy war against the United States, like this white group. Say hello to Guantanamo. On Monday, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled, in effect, that you can go to prison for trying to hold a peace talk with groups deemed to be foreign terrorist organizations. But if the group is a homegrown white terrorist organization, it's apparently okay not just to associate with them, but also to offer them military training as they plot against this country. Maybe Obama is just being savvy by not coming down hard on the militia, as Mark Potok head of the SPLC, said, quote, there's a huge amount of anger, and what we're really lacking at this moment is a kind of spark, end quote. In an apparent attempt to diffuse the tension, Obama does such things as supporting a U.S. Supreme Court decision crippling Washington, D.C.'s gun control law. And then Obama signs a bill that allows visitors to national parks to carry guns. It doesn't make any difference. You know, Obama could strip himself naked, stand out in front of the White House, and beat himself with razor-studded clubs, and still these white bastards would continue to say, ah, he's a communist! Had a black rifleman showed up, say, for Ronald Reagan's states' rights speech in Philadelphia, Mississippi, back in 1980, they might still be dredging the Pearl River looking for his remains. Courtland Malloy, writing for the Washington Post. Yeah, you know, I've told the story of back in the day when the Black Panthers were active, driving down a street in my hometown and seeing these guys going into bars cleaning out the drunks, and they had carbines or 30 calibers strapped to their back. And, you know, white people, when that video hit the news, or that, yeah, video, when that hit the news reports that night, white people in Toledo, Ohio were screaming to disarm the Negroes. We'll be right back.
And they say,
loud, proud, progressive talk. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 10 before the hour. Jeff is in Columbia, Tennessee, listening on XM. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Mike. I've been listening about McChrystal. And, you know, this is the biggest setup there ever was. You know, you got a room full of feel-great officers and a general and a room with a reporter, and they're going to spout off like that. And they spent their whole life keeping their mouth shut, you know. And then I think this is just the way that, he knew he couldn't win in Afghanistan. So this is just his way of leaving without his record being blemished.
Oh, I see. So you think that he and his inner circle decided to save his ass?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
You know, they spent their whole life keeping their mouth shut.
Right. Yeah, it is. No. It does seem just from the get-go, the whole thing just seemed kind of strange. Why would these guys talk like this?
Yeah.
With a reporter there, especially a reporter from Rolling Stone, for God's sake.
Yeah. I think you or I have enough sense not to say anything when you got a reporter sitting right there, if we're drunk.
Right. Well, that's the truth. Well, you may be right. I mean, a lot of people have emailed the program. Well, not a lot, but just enough have emailed the program with a similar suggestion that the whole thing is just to save McChrystal's ass and make, so somebody else takes the fall.
Right.
And looks like the designated doofus may be Petraeus.
Nah, he'll get out of there, too, before it happens.
You think?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, them guys, they're experts at running and hiding. And, I just wonder how many of those men on the front lines can say something and get to go home.
Probably not many.
Well, I know I got my Article 15 for calling somebody a lifer one time, lost 2 pay grades in a month at the barracks. And,
Because you called somebody a lifer?
Yeah.
How many stars did he have?
Oh, he did. It was a command sergeant major of the post.
That's all?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
He only been in the Army like 42 years or some crap like that. You know, what is he, you know?
Right, right.
You know, but anyway. I want to ask you, did you see that documentary, Gasland?
I haven't yet. A lot of people have been telling me I got to see this.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah,
you'll cry.
I will. It's a film, isn't it? It's a movie. I mean,
yeah, it's on HBO.
HBO, that's right.
Yeah, if you have it, you can get it on demand this week.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
HBO, whatever.
Yeah, we're definitely going to watch it because I've heard some incredible. It was at the Sundance Film Festival, I think.
Yeah, and unbelievable. And people lighting their faucets on fire and.
Mm-hmm. They turn on the water up in Pennsylvania where they're drilling for this gas, and their spigots catch fire. Yeah.
This is like, I don't know what he said, 35 states? It's been going on 35 states. It has to do with that fracking or cracking or whatever it is.
Fracking.
Fracking with good old lovable Dick Cheney.
Yeah.
Which his battery would die.
Yeah, don't we all? All right, Jeff, thanks.
Okay.
All right,
okay.
Take care. I appreciate you checking in. Yeah, we gotta watch that. What did he say? Gasland. That's right. Quick, write it down, Malloy, before you forget it. Gasland. Did any of you people get up and dance when we did Who Stole the Kishka? When we used to do that, we'd get emails from people that say, oh, boy. Nobody says anything now. I don't think y'all did it. I really don't. We got time to squeeze in Kathleen. Yes, we do. In Idaho, listening on KQNT.
I appreciate your coverage of the oil catastrophe. I wanted to request that you do a program on the toxicity of the air quality in that area.
Uh-huh.
I understand it's at a very dangerous level.
Yeah.
Last evening was the first time I heard any reference to using the military for mass evacuations. They didn't specify in that area, but I would assume that's the only place.
Well, I think there probably are some contingency plans, but I don't think, I don't know. I don't think it's going to get to that point, but I would hope like hell that the military would assist in, look what happened in Katrina when people couldn't evacuate. And they were left in the stew to drown and die and get sick. I would hope to hell that the U.S. government has some kind of an evacuation plan if this methane gas or whatever it might be, just the toxicity from the oil and the dispersants gets into the air to the extent that people start getting sick inland. Yeah.
Well, they've done a study in one of the cities, and I guess the hydrogen sulfide levels are very unacceptable, and a number of the other gases as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's only going to get worse. I mean, when they took off that top hat, somebody wrote to me and said, "This the whole thing sounds like a bad Fred Astaire movie." But when they took off this damaged top hat today, and you can go online and see these images right now, live camera feeds, video feeds, I should say, from this monster, and it's just when you sit there and stare at it for 30 seconds, Kathleen, I'll guarantee you that you'll have to go take a Valium. Or no, what do people take now? Xanax or Ativan or something.
I just cry. It makes me so sick.
I know.
Because I'm from Florida, and I know how pristine those beaches are.
Oh, God.
I was there 8 years ago, and it just makes me sick.
It's awful. That's those beaches along what they call the Forgotten Coast, from Apalachicola all the way out to Panama City are beaches where I and my kids have gone for 25 years. And I just can't believe that the horror is occurring down there. Hey, Kathleen, thanks.
The wildlife and the
Yeah. I mean,
unbelievable.
The whole thing is destroyed. Thanks, Kathleen. I appreciate you checking in. Stick around. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. What happened with the Larry King fundraising gig the other night? Did they raise anything? Do you know, Kathy? Oy, it is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. The phone number here is 877-996-2556. We're talking about a bunch of stuff tonight, now. According to ABC News, a trusted aide to Louisiana Republican Senator David Vitter, you remember him, the one that cheated on his poor, sorry, sad wife. Sorry for having met this bastard, and sad because she stood, didn't she stand out there with him? Most of them do. Anyway, an aide to Vitter resigned this morning after ABC News reported that he'd been arrested for attacking his ex-girlfriend with a knife and had an open warrant for his arrest in Baton Rouge on a drunk driving charge. The aide, now there's a reason I'm telling you this. The aide, Brent Fuhrer, how's that for a name? Brent Fuhrer worked on the Republican senator's last campaign and has spent the last 5 years in his Washington office, where he was assigned to handle women's issues. Jesus God. Ah. So Vitter cheats on his wife and has a guy working for him who likes to beat women and attack them with a knife and has a criminal record as long as your arm. The victim is 27. After drinking at a restaurant, the two returned to Fuhrer's Capitol apartment, the report says. Fuhrer would not let her leave. He pulled on her coat, which caused it to rip, then pulled out a knife and stabbed her in the hand. The documents charging this pig with assault say that he became angry when he found phone numbers in her BlackBerry that he assumed were from men, I guess. This is his ex-girlfriend. He smashed the phone when she tried to call 911. He shoved her to the floor, then held his hand over her mouth and threw her on a bed. It goes on here, but I don't think I can read this part on the radio. Senator David Vitter, just your typical Republican rat bastard. That's all, but, you know, move on. Nothing to see here. Just somebody sent me that. And his top aide, who works on women's issues, who tries to stab women to death. Wow. Tom in Bullhead City, Arizona. Those fires out there around you, Tom?
Not too close. Can you hear me okay?
I hear you just clear as a bell from Notre Dame.
Anyway, I wanted to say that first call you had last hour was great. I liked to listen to what he had to say, and I wanted to hear you go on a real rant about Petraeus and McChrystal. Given what you said about last night about Obama will not fire him, that he'll accept the resignation. Remember uh-huh. You're saying all that?
Yeah.
And then given I've been following you for years now, and I'm one of these guys, I'm right with you. I mean, you take me up and down on these peaks and valleys. I mean, you were real hopeful when Obama first was going against Hillary in 2008, and mm-hmm. you were really great, and I followed you, the ups and downs and the twisties and turnies, and I just I was just begging for a rant on this Petraeus McChrystal thing. And the only thing I could throw onto that first caller's statement was that when I was there from 1976 to 1988, they came out with a thing and they had the POD, the plan of the day, and you, the first thing in the plan of the day is you're sitting there standing there at attention, they're telling you, the UCMJ article, and they give you one. Like, for example, you can't have sex with puppies no matter how, you know, trivial, you know?
Right,
and,
right.
And then one of the things that came up in 1986 was you cannot disgrace or disrespect the commander-in-chief.
Right.
And that was a USMC article. And I had been in by this time. I had already been in for 10 years, and I never heard anything about this, that you can't criticize the commander-in-chief, you know, mm-hmm. because you can vote, you know, in the military.
Right.
And but the first time I ever heard anything about it was in 1986 when Reagan was in. Mm-hmm. And they started all this crap about, well, you can't say anything about the commander-in-chief, you know. So ran on. I'm listening, Bo.
Well, I hear you. Thanks, Tom.
Bye-bye.
All right, appreciate you checking in. You know, the military, I'm not trying to educate anybody here, because if you've served in the military, you're way ahead of me on this. If you haven't, it really doesn't matter. But the operative principle in the military is chain of command, period. It has to be, because you're ordering people to go die. To take the risk of going to die. You're ordering people to kill. In other words, you're ordering people to down into that base instinct of fight or flight. And you've got to have instantaneous obedience. And the only way instantaneous obedience can occur is if you have a clear chain of demand, a chain of command that simply doesn't waver. Ever, under any circumstances. If it does waver, then the entire command structure can just go right in the toilet. And when that happens, then you start to lose wars. Whoops. Wait a minute. Have we won one lately? Oh, that's right, Grenada. But the chain of command is key. A. B. Well, no, that would be. That would be B. A would be that in the founding of this country, it was made clear, because the founders have seen so much religious warfare and so much imperialism. Imperialism, by that I mean orders from the king. They made it very clear that first there would be no official religion, because down that road lies blood and severed heads. And secondly, the military would forever be under control of civilians, for the obvious reasons. I mean, Jesus, this is not hard stuff. So, you know, the caller tonight that said, you know, this is a setup, that McChrystal knew exactly what he was doing. He's just tired of riding a dead horse, so he's getting out and let somebody else take responsibility for the bug out when it comes, because it is coming. In order to maintain that chain of command, especially when you get up around the command structure and then into the civilian level of control, you can't have people sitting around talking trash about the vice president, talking trash about the president, disrespecting, you know, the ambassador to Afghanistan is a former four-star general himself. I think four-star general himself, if not 4-3. Maybe he's a lieutenant general. But, I mean, it's just astonishing. And one of the special advisors on the security team is the former commandant of the United States Marine Corps. And you have some whistle ass like Stanley McChrystal is going to sit around with his boys and let his boys chew on these people like they don't exist or something? No. Nuh-uh. No, it doesn't work that way. It really doesn't. We'll be right back. I'm going to this fight, I'll take my union gun. Going to end this world of slavery. I said,
truth seekers, gather round the campfire. It's More Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. You know, when Obama, I hate to go back to this topic, because it's not, we're not supposed to go back to it. See, Petraeus was nominated. Petraeus will get the fastest confirmation in the history of the Senate Armed Services Committee. So all this is designed to get this story off the front page and go on with the prosecution of this filthy war. But it's hard to let this go in light of what Obama said today. Do you think he really meant it when he said that McChrystal was someone who he admired and who's had been a good leader and you know, all that complimentary horse crap that Obama said today? Remember what Seymour Hersh had to say about this thug back in May of last year. Dick Cheney headed a secret assassination wing, and the head of the right, and the head of that wing was Stanley McChrystal. In an interview with the Gulf News, on May 12, 2009, Pulitzer Prize winning American investigative journalist Seymour Hersh said that there is a special unit called the Joint Special Operations Command, JSOC, that does high value targeting of men who are known or suspected to be involved in anti-American activities or are believed to be planning such activities. According to Hersh, JSOC was headed by former Vice President Dick Cheney and the former head of JSOC, Lieutenant General Stanley McChrystal, who has just been named the new commander in charge of the war in Afghanistan. Remember, this is 13, 14 months ago. Most of what McChrystal has done over a 33-year career remains classified, including service between 2003 and 2008 as commander of the JSOC, an elite unit so clandestine that the Pentagon for years refused to acknowledge its existence, which means only one thing, of course, it's involved in horrendously violent and illegal activities. On July 22, 2006, Human Rights Watch issued a report about American torture practices at three facilities in Iraq. One of them was Camp Nama, which was operated by JSOC under direction of then Major General Stanley McChrystal. Anyway, it just goes on and on. This was a year ago this came out, and it was a year plus that Seymour Hersh, investigative reporter, blew the whistle on this guy. So what does Obama mean when he says he really admires him and respects his valor or whatever the hell he said? This guy was a torture murderer. That's all he was. He was just an out of control. He was a Captain Kurtz without the soundstage. That's all. Without the you know, without the Doors music in the background, without the cinematography, an out of control operator who has probably, you know, a lot of people say, well, Malloy, what do you expect? Well, I'll tell you what I expect. I don't expect some renegade flag rank officer in the United States military ginning up. How many terrorists do you suppose McChrystal's activities? How many incipient terrorists or incipient insurgents or whatever word you want to use, people who are going to, by God, get even because McChrystal ordered the torture of their son or their father or their mother or whomever? How many? Pick a number. 1? 1,000? 1,000,000? 10,000,000? I mean, these macho bastards that run around, yeah, we will operate outside the law with the blessing of the law. We can do anything we want. Ha, ha, ha. We're America's team. We'll do anything. We don't answer to anybody. We have the vice president behind us. You know, vice president's really one in charge, not the little wimp from Texas. What's his name? Bush. What a name. Bush. Dick Cheney, he's our leader. And that's what McChrystal and his outlaws did. They set up enough death and destruction for God knows how many Americans eventually. But will anybody ever, you know, connect the dots? Just like if you want to believe the, you don't have to believe the entire story of what happened on 9/11, but you are well served to believe that it was 19 Saudis who came to this country. That's why we invaded Afghanistan and Iraq, is because the people that blew up our buildings and killed people were Saudis. That makes sense, doesn't it? Well, it was Bush and Cheney. But they, in stuff they left behind and stuff that writings and books and tapes and audios and the whole thing from these people, as to why they became terrorists, why they became bombers, why they became suicide bombers, is very simple. Because of what we have done and continue to do to their people. You think they're ever going to stop? Let me ask you something. Would you, if someone were killing members of your family and your countrymen, and I mean, would you just say, oh yeah, okay, well, they killed 20 more today, I think I'll go have a beer? Well, if you're a Republican, yes, of course you would, because you're a cowardly bastard. But if you're a normal human being, no, you wouldn't do it.
Men, are you...
With the truth. It's More Mike Malloy.
And I know that if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be. Don't know much about geography. Don't know much trigonometry. Don't know much about algebra.
Don't know what it's 25 before the hour. This is the Malloy program. Back to your phone calls. Chuck is in Knoxville, Tennessee, listening on Sirius. Hey, Chuck.
Hey, Mike. How you doing, buddy?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good music.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, I'm not as young as I used to be, must be. Used to be I could talk on the CB and keep the truck between the lines and drink my martini and dance to the Who Stole the Kushka.
Kishka.
Much better than I could. Or Kushka, much better than I can now. And I lost my martini, but I saved the olive, right?
Well, that's good. Well, Chuck, you know, we're all getting old. Good God.
I want to tell you something crossed my mind. In the congressional hearings about the Gulf Oil spill, they found out that the internal paperwork, BP was saying that it was 100,000 barrels a day that they knew from the beginning. And if you take that 100,000 barrels or 4 million gallons a day and multiply it out over 44 days, you come to 176 million gallons. That's equivalent to the worst oil spill in history.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Well, if you take that same 44 days and throw it on the calendar, guess what you come up with?
What?
June 3rd. Makes you kind of wonder a little bit, doesn't it?
Well, wait. Well, you lost me.
Isn't that the same day they started capping the well?
Was it June 3rd?
Yeah, that's what you said earlier.
Well, I don't know. Chuck, maybe it's late. I'm missing the point, man. What?
What I'm trying to say is I find it a very interesting coincidence that the day that they're crossing over into new territory in terms of total damage to the environment is the same day they decide to get off their ass and do something.
Well, I think something, don't you agree that something should have been done from the very beginning?
That's my point.
Yeah. I mean, somebody should have said something. Somebody should have been the least bit honest, but at the very beginning. But remember what they said at the beginning. Oh, well, this is going to be a little spill. Don't worry about it. 1,000 gallons a day, barrels or whatever. No, I think I agree with you. I think the whole thing is suspicious. There's a couple of websites now. Somebody just sent me a link to a website that links up with all six of these cameras that are focused on this thing underwater. And I've been sitting here during the breaks looking at this thing, and I'll tell you, it is scary as hell, Chuck. I mean, we're dealing, especially now that that top hat thing has come off, and you have this huge gusher of oil down there that's just, I mean, nothing is stopping it now. Nothing.
Well, they put the hat back on. They just announced it on the news.
Oh, tonight?
Yeah. They said it was off for a total of 11 hours. Of course, now it'll take several days for it to pick up the kind of volume it was supposedly sucking up.
Right, right. Well,
but, you know, the thing about it is that if they think that the backlash from this has even gotten started, they're wrong. I mean, you're talking about a situation where so far the only people who have been raising any cane about this have been the Louisianans and the Alabamans and the Mississippians, and these are relatively poorer people, okay? The fishermen barely eke out a living. My brother used to work in the fishing industry, I can tell you. You go down to Florida. I lived in Florida for 28 years. I can tell you anything you want to know about Florida just about.
Right, right.
And these people are an entirely different breed of people, okay?
Mm-hmm.
When it starts coming into the Tampa area, it's going to hit like you wouldn't believe, and that ain't nothing compared to what's going to happen when it hits Miami, and that ain't going to be nothing compared to what it hits when it hits Palm Beach, and they start having to go to more polo matches because they can't go to the beach, all right? These people aren't, I mean, you're talking very old money.
Right.
And I can tell you, one rich guy is fine with whatever another rich guy is doing as long as he ain't messing up his own backyard. But once he starts messing up his beach, that's a whole other story, buddy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I...
And I lost you.
Yeah, no, go. No, I'm just sitting here listening to you. Uh-oh, now I'm losing you, Chuck. You're fading way far away there. But, Chuck, thanks. I appreciate you checking in, pal. Jonathan is in Malvern, PA. Hey, Jonathan.
Hey, yeah, I was just calling because, like, basically, the situation over there is, like, it's right next door to Pakistan, and apparently they've got nukes, you know, and apparently they're operating not out of some sort of spirit of cooperation, but out of a spirit of caution, and they've dug all these weird underground tunnels. I don't remember who said this. I think it might have been... might have been Seymour Hersh.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, the point is that we've got all these competing intelligence agencies. You know, we've got the Japanese who are supposedly talking to Karzai now about this mineral find. And then we got the Pakistanis who apparently aren't really cooperating with anybody, including us. So it's like the whole thing is just, and basically, I mean, McChrystal just seems like Stonewall Jackson on Red Bull.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, it's just it's like, did we learn anything at all from the Russians or the British? I mean, what are we trying to achieve? It's not like we got a pizza store out in I don't know, someplace out in the Midwest that's operating their shop using renewable fuels, using like pizza grease or something like that.
Right.
So why are we, you know, why are we expending the lives of 1,000-plus Americans in Afghanistan when we could just go to the local pizza shop and ask them how they're doing?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, why set up this pipeline for all this oil when we've got the available means at the local pizza store? They're running their vehicles on pizza grease.
Well, but you know, ExxonMobil and Conoco and... BP and all these companies, they can't make any money on pizza grease.
Yeah, well, point taken. You know, definitely an obvious, you know, I'm not trying to be sarcastic, but definitely a Captain Obvious statement. But
sure.
It just, You know, I mean, it just seems like, why would we, so far we've lost, what, like 6,000 plus American service people, men and women who are never going to ever see their families, a birthday, a holiday ever again, because we're stuck basically in Afghanistan and Iraq, and we have no support. We don't have the so-called coalition or the willing anymore.
No, everybody else has bugged out. But isn't this, Jonathan, isn't this what capitalism and corporatism does? They don't give a damn. 6,000 dead Americans, another 40,000 permanently wounded. So what? That's collateral damage. They don't care. And the president of the United States, this one and the last one and the one before him, they don't care. They don't give a damn. Why should they care, Jonathan? Why should these presidents, come out today like Obama did? Why should they come out and say, look, we're fighting a losing battle. There's no way we're going to win this. Alexander the Great didn't do it. The Russians didn't do it. The British didn't do it. We're leaving. Why doesn't he do that? Tell me, what do you think? Do you think it's because he's afraid somebody will shoot him like they did Kennedy?
Well, John Stewart had this hilarious montage on where basically he showed every single president since, like, I think it was since, like, Carter or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
All saying, this is the year we have to get off oil. This is the year we have to stop depending on foreign energy resources. Every single president. So it's almost like a national joke.
It is.
It's like, so when's he going to give the we're addicted to oil speech, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, he mentioned it the other day, I think. John Stewart's right. You can take a look at every president probably since before. Maybe Nixon was saying it too. Got to get off foreign oil. Got to get off foreign oil. All oil is foreign oil unless it was, because it all goes, I'm pretty sure it all goes to the market. And then the oil buyers bid on it. Who in the hell knows if oil comes out of Oklahoma and some oil trader buys it on an international market, and it's been mixed with oil, as long as it's the same quality, the same grade, out of Saudi Arabia or Kuwait or Venezuela or, East Kneecap, Wyoming. Who in the hell's to know? The whole thing about, we got to break our dependency on foreign oil, that's a joke. And you're in on it, and I'm in on it. Most people that can think are in on it, but it's just a joke that continues to kill Americans.
It's unfortunate. It's definitely unfortunate.
It is indeed. Thanks, Jonathan. I appreciate you calling. We'll be back. Back there goes our get rid of that mini disc player. It is 10 before the hour. Thanks to our crew, Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent, Bruce Enberg, economics, Kate Petrini, education, Bob Alexander, and Bridget Wolf, the ethics advisors of the program, and Kathy Bay, who's also the executive producer and engineer of the program. Mary is in early Iowa listening on Sirius. Hey, Mary.
Hi. Well, I read, do you want me to tell you what I think?
I certainly do.
Well, it might not be much, but I believe that, I read Naomi Klein's shock doctrine, where we destroyed the countries of South and Central America financially and militarily,
right,
or else we just kill them. I believe that that's what's happening to our country. And when I didn't believe in the war, and when we went in, I said, well, I hope that Bush and Cheney don't decide to democratize the United States, which, of course, I believe they have. And I believe that the military has taken over. And I believe that when, after McChrystal talked to the president, he went in and talked to the others, Gates and the rest of them, and they told him what to do. And I believe we've been taken over by the military-industrial complex, and I don't know how we'll get out of it. And I just wake up each morning and tell myself there's been a military coup, and then everything makes sense.
Well, you're probably right, and let's not forget, let's not let get lost in all this madness of the past 48 hours. Hillary Clinton, when this story broke in Rolling Stone, Hillary Clinton made it very clear that she was a big fan of McChrystal's. And
oh yes, that's why I wouldn't vote for her. I was delegate to our county convention, and we either had to vote. I wanted Joe Biden, of course. I worked for him. He's the most peaceful. But they took us, they said we had to go in one room or the other and cast, it's a caucus in Iowa, and cast a vote for either Hillary or Obama. And I stood up and I said, there was another delegate with me, and I said, there are, under no circumstances will we vote for either Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama, and we walked out of there.
Well, that was probably a very wise move, and it's a shame that 56 million people decided not to do that and put Obama in another corporatist. Oh, well, I voted for him. Mary, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. That's the part that makes my skin crawl is the fact that I declared myself part of the problem and voted for Barack Obama instead of voting for the Green candidate or anybody else. Bill is in Orange City, California. Hey, Bill.
Hello?
Yeah, hi.
Yeah, I've been listening to you since March of 05.
Oh, my.
And when I first started listening to you, you told me, or you said you didn't see how you could ever vote for a Democrat again.
Mm-hmm.
So keeping that in mind, what do you think about third-party possibility?
Well, that's the direction I'm firmly in. I belong to that school where I don't think I can vote for a Democrat again. But when it came time to walk into the voting booth, and I saw, for example, McCain and Palin over here and, Obama and, Biden over here, I just chose the lesser of two evils and voted Democrat. I'm not going to do that again.
You know, it seems like for those of us that are, quote, left of center, ever since McGovern in 72, it's been nothing but a lesser of two evils. You know, look what we've had to show for the last 35 years.
And don't forget, when McGovern tried to explain to the country that that Nixon was a megalomaniac, maniacal liar, and what did he win? He won his home state, Massachusetts, and I think he won D.C.
Massachusetts and his still home state of South Dakota. That was it.
And that's it. And the American public just went bananas for Tricky Dick again. That was in 72. And what happened in 74? The rat bastard almost brought the country into a horrendous constitutional crisis and had to resign. So the point I'm trying to make is that we Americans, where it concerns our political affiliations and the way we select our lawyers, we're just dumber than dirt. I mean, we really are, Bill. A third-party candidate, yay, let's do it. But it never happens. And why doesn't it happen? Because Americans are stupid. And we're going to continue to do this We're going to continue to vote for the corporate party candidate, whether that person is a Democrat or Republican, until the country collapses.
Have a look at, everybody talks about how great Clinton was. If Ross Perot hadn't been in 92 or 96, he wouldn't have gotten elected.
Right, that's true.
He never even, you know, he only got, what, 42, 43% of the vote.
That's it. And it would have been what the original plan was, and that was to keep George Herbert Walker Bush in, because George Herbert Walker Bush was also part of the capitalist militaristic establishment, and he would have just continued the policies put in place by the Reagans. But they screwed up. They hadn't figured out how to manipulate the voting machine yet. Hey, Bill, thanks. We got to go. I appreciate you checking in. Well, I'll tell you what. You have a pleasant evening, what's left of it. I'll see you tomorrow night. I'm Mike Malloy. Take care. Keep it lit.